I have no idea what's going on with my cell coverage today.
Totally fine. We'll just jump right back to it.
Perfect.
In any case, it was both of the Spencer women. I mean, they, I thought, were spectacular. Karen Spencer, who has that jet black hair and wore that stunning, beautiful royal purple dress with the caplet over it, with the hat. And then Kitty Spencer is Diana's niece. And she had on that green D&G dress with the fascinator, with the perfect makeup and the orange shoes and the orange bag. I mean, I thought they were perfect. I was not impressed with Pippa Middleton.
No, not at all. Not at all. And here's somebody who surprised me. And I don't know if you're going to agree or not, but I, you know what? Here's the deal. I'm going to give her most improved award.
Okay.
The award for most improved goes to Fergie.
I knew you were going to say that.
Like, normally, let's be honest. Normally, Fergie's a bit of a white hot mess.
She's such a wild card, but I also think that, like, her year of damage has really kind of reined her in.
Mm-hmm. But I was surprised that everything was tailored and matched. Like, I didn't expect – you never know what to expect with Fergie. But I would say, like, would I wear her outfit? No. But I would say most improved award goes to her.
Yeah, because she was appropriate. It was not about her. She didn't make it about her. She didn't do anything to steal the show or cause a scene. She was just well put together and appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only word that kind of comes to mind, because there's nothing about her that I would say that's necessarily quote unquote beautiful. And mm-hmm. She's not somebody who's known for being polished or well put together. But in this particular instance, she was everything she needed to be, which was understated and appropriate.
Yes, absolutely agree.
Somebody who I had to actually look up, because I saw her and I thought, oh my God, it's Jane Doe from The Blind Spot. And then I thought, no, she's not there. And I looked her up. She's Tom Hardy's partner, wife, date, Charlotte Riley.
Mm-hmm.
In that black floral dress with the fascinator hat with the florals on it. Gorgeous, gorgeous, like amazing, so amazing. The rest of the, like, you know, Princess Eugene, yeah,
yeah,
Priyanka, yeah, eh. The hat on Serena with the thing. I was like, and even Camilla, who, you know, my mother said, she's like, I'm so sorry, and I'm sorry, but I hate her. She's like, I hate her. I hate everything she stands for. I hate what she did to Diana. And I'm like, you know what? I get it. Nobody likes the other woman, but
hey, it's a two to tango there. Like, it's just, you know, hate Charles also.
But it's not just, you know, at the end of the day, I think that what you have to do is you have to feel such deep sorrow and empathy for everyone involved. Diana is an icon, but not somebody who was overly stable emotionally.
Right. She was a child when she got married.
Right. A situation made worse by the fact that she married somebody who didn't love her. She was the acceptable choice because he has always loved Camilla. And their relationship, their love story, if you take Diana out of it, that is such a beautiful testament of what's meant to be will find a way,
mm-hmm.
damning all else. And I don't hate Camilla. I hate her hat.
Yes. I hate her hat also.
I don't hate her. I hate her hat.
I agree 100%. It really looks like a swan landed and nested on her head.
I thought it looked like asbestos. Like from when I was a kid in the 70s and 80s, and there was that pink asbestos up in the attic that, you know, they had to come in and remove. It was like they took a layer and they put it on her head. And they finished it off with some trim. Okay, we have to go back now. I think, like, we've done all of the people. Oh, I will say this. One more. James Corbin?
Yes.
Okay, forget about him. He's a little cutie pie. But his wife in that blush was
beautiful.
So amazing. Like, I really thought that the women who did it well did it so well. And I felt like the women who got it wrong, it was just like, ugh, so bad. There was nobody that I felt lukewarm about. Maybe Gina Torres, because I thought her dress looked like it came from BCBG.
Gina Torres was definitely one of the ones I did not like.
I didn't mind it, but I wasn't like impressed.
And then also Prince Harry has a friend. Oh, his name's plays polo. His name's like Nacho or something. I did not like his date's outfit. It was just very blah. But again,
I didn't even know that he had a friend named Nacho.
Yeah. He got in trouble because he sent out a couple of Instagram photos from the evening reception and then had to be taken down.
Oh, was he the one who posted the tux and his polo?
Yes.
Cologne and the embroidery of the thing. Okay. Yeah, I still caught that. I didn't realize his name was Nacho.
Yes.
Okay, so all of them, now we're gonna backpedal. We're gonna go back to the ceremony. Well, let me say this. First of all, I watched the whole thing from start to finish. I loved it. I loved the preacher until, I think he could have cut the last 3 minutes off. When he started talking about, slaves and spirituals and things like that, it didn't make sense. Not because it doesn't make sense to acknowledge slavery. It didn't make sense because it was one line. Like, in this whole big, beautiful thing about love and power and all of the things that it does and talking about Martin Luther King Jr. and quoting all of these great things and quoting the Bible and giving this beautiful gossip. It's like we threw in two lines of slavery and then we abandoned it and went right back around. That was the only part that I was like, all right, we literally could have stopped it right before that and been perfect. I loved it. I thought he was fantastic. Everyone else was like, what in the hell is going on here? I thought he was so great. But the faces of the people in the room were like blown away.
Oh, it was hysterical to watch the camera pan in on some of the faces.
I just was like, oh my God, they have no idea what's happening. But when you talk about a country that Britain doesn't have the same history of slavery that America does.
Right.
Their narrative in terms of slavery is so different. And yet they do still, the racial issues that are there are very, very clear. And I was reading somewhere, somebody said, when the British discuss race, they call it immigration. And so either you have to believe that all they talk about is race because all they're focused on is immigration, or they never talk about race. And neither of those things are good. But to have so many things between the pastor and the gospel, I don't think anyone was like, we're going to force it down your throat that she's half black. But it felt authentic and it felt real and it felt like it meant something. It wasn't there as a political statement. It was there as just a very kind of organic part of who she is. And it freshened it. And I think I saw a lot of people say, this is really weird. I didn't think it was weird. I just thought it was long.
He spoke for 14 minutes. And when I read that he spoke for 14 minutes, I was like, really? Because it really did seem longer. But I loved his energy. I loved his message. I agree with you about the slavery. But I really liked him. And you know what? It breathed some life into an establishment where, royals have been getting married for centuries and centuries and centuries. And other than the fashion, I don't think that those ceremonies have really changed much each century. Well, it changed a whole hell of a lot on Saturday.
And I think that that's, a lot of people have said, this changes what it means to be black and British. And as somebody who's not black, I don't really have a place to comment on it. But the monarchy itself, it's very much almost like when Obama became president and people said, like, we're now in a post-racial society. I don't believe that. I don't believe that we're ever going to be post-racial. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to slowly and slowly become less important, especially as people like me have more kind of, you know, culturally mixed and racially mixed children. But I don't think that it's quote unquote post-racial, but I definitely think that it changes the narrative. It absolutely just visually changes the monarchy, because if you were Black and British from that standpoint, there was nobody that looked like you. There was nobody that even hinted at you. And yet now we have a biracial duchess.
Yep.
She's not tolerated. She's embraced. Nobody is, they're not just kind of, giving Harry his due and saying, fine, let him do what he wants. I mean, Prince Charles walked her down the aisle. The Queen invited her for Christmas. You get the sense that she is absolutely beloved and welcomed by the royal family. Never mind the outliers, but by the people who matter, they just seem to adore her. And I think that that's a symbol of such deep change, and that it's going to mean so much going down.
I agree. I absolutely agree with what you just said. And I think, and again, going back to Prince Charles, I mean, not only did he walk her down the aisle, but apparently if you've read all the news from this weekend and stuff, he gave just a really very touching toast at the Queen's reception Saturday afternoon. And, talked a lot about what he called his darling old Harry, and then, went on to really give a nice tribute to her as well.
I think that even the way that, when we're talking about the ceremony, the fact that this is a woman who walked herself halfway down by herself was incredible to me. And then that he walked her. And I kind of looked up whether or not there was ever any talk of he and Diana having a girl or anything like that. And there seemed to have been some chatter that Charles always said he wanted a girl. And I know that he's given somebody away before, but this isn't giving her, I didn't feel like he was giving her away. I felt like he was welcoming her in. And even when he walked, he almost seemed to walk just a step ahead of her. Like he was leading her to his son. I thought that Charles is somebody who I think has gotten a bad rap over the years, but there was just such a comfort. And he looked so proud to be doing this that I thought it was a really beautiful, beautiful moment. The kid behind her, the little page boy who looked like Macaulay Culkin from Home Alone, who was like, yeah, like that little kid. Do you know who I'm talking about? You have to.
Yes, 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 yes. That was one of her friend, that Jessica Mulroney's kids.
Okay, his face, all I saw was Home Alone. I saw little Macaulay Culkin being like, this is the most exciting thing ever. He was adorable. She was the absolute picture of serenity and poise and grace. When he lifted her veil, the way she looked at him, and I will say this, I get she's an actress. I'm not stupid. Like, I understand that there's a level of this that is affected by that. But none of it looked fake. It looked so, so real. Like the way that they looked at each other, it felt so intimate. It didn't feel like there were 600 people. It didn't feel like there were 20 people. It felt like there were, Harry and Meghan.
Uh-huh.
And speaking of, the fact that the kind of tagline was "When Harry met Meghan," so American.
Yeah.
Because who doesn't love When Harry Met Sally? And if you're young and you're listening to the podcast and you haven't seen When Harry Met Sally, first of all, shame on you. Secondly, I give you permission to shut us down and go get it right now, because it is an epic and fantastic movie. And if you've never seen a woman fake an orgasm, go and watch that scene.
I just recently watched that movie. I mean, as recently as it was my flight back from London, you know, 11 hours. And there wasn't anything that I really wanted to see as far as new releases. So I went into the video library on board and pulled out some oldies. And When Harry Met Sally was one of them. And that movie just stands the test of time.
It does, because I think it speaks to so much about how men and women interact. Can men and women be friends? Truly just platonic friends? You know, and those are, I guess, I have friends that are men that I don't have a romantic, that I have no romantic history with. None whatsoever. I have men that are friends that I had a former romantic history with. And that, you know, it just morphed into friendship. I think that it can, but I think that it's such a great commentary, and Billy Crystal is everything, and Meg Ryan, like the whole, that movie is perfect. It really was.
It really is.
And the fact that they were so cheeky because they're British about it, and they made it When Harry Met Meghan, I thought was like super cute. So we've done, let's see, what have we done? We've done her styling. None of us talked about Harry. And I think that that's indicative of the wedding industry. You talk about the bride and you kind of are like, oh, and that groom. I loved that he kept his beard. Loved that he kept his beard. I think that the way that he loves her is just beautiful. I mean, his military outfit, good, great. The hat, fine. But I think where he really made his statement was the second look. But the second look is iconic, Hollywood, glam, sexy, understated, elegant. It's the dress that you wanted that I said we wouldn't see until the reception. First of all, kudos to you, my friend, because you called Stella McCartney.
Thank you.
And you said, I think we're going to see some drape, like something Grecian and something drapey. And I said, if we do, we won't see it till the reception. And we were both right there. But that dress and his tux,
they were
and that car.
They were absolutely, that was, they were everything. I cannot say that enough.
When she came out, I was like, I was breathless. I mean, her face, her hair, that aquamarine, we're going to talk about all of that. The aquamarine ring, though, when you go back to who she is and the different type of monarch that she's going to be, that aquamarine ring was a ring that Diana commissioned for herself after she and Charles got divorced. She wanted to continue wearing something, and she didn't think it would be appropriate to wear the sapphire. And so she had that ring made for herself as a single woman, as somebody who was finally going to get to live her life on her terms. And the fact that that piece of jewelry is the one that Harry gave to Meghan, I thought was very much like, you know, you still get to be you. It was taking the intent behind it when his mother had it made and passing it on to his wife. Loved it. Loved it. And it matched the car. Like, now I want to match my jewelry to my car.
It was just stunning.
It was perfect.
They looked perfect. Like something out of an ad. I think I said this to you on the phone this weekend. I said it was something out of like a Bond movie, or just, you know, getting into the car and driving away and, you know, him in the
But the Bronx Tale moment. The Bronx Tale moment where he puts her in the car. And she reaches over to make sure that he's unlocked. You didn't see that a lot in the press. You didn't see it a lot in video. But when she did that, it was just another display of she's not expecting him to dote on her. She's not expecting him to treat her like this super hyper delicate flower. And she's not there to be a silent witness. She's an active participant. And the fact that she takes care of him back when she reached over in the car was actually one of my favorite moments of the day. And you don't see it a lot.
Everything about that entire scene was perfect.
Yeah. And if you go and you pull the picture of JFK Jr. and Carolyn Bessette Kennedy leaving their ceremony. And you put it next to the picture of Harry and Meghan leaving to go to their reception. They're like, they're literally mirrored opposites.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the two brides. And she was quoted when they were talking about her wedding scene in suits. And they were talking about all the different dresses she could wear. She made the comment and she said, Carolyn Bessette Kennedy was, quote unquote, everything goals. And so I think we all knew she wanted to be simple. We all knew she wanted to have those clean lines. We all knew that there was going to be some level of a drape. But when you put them up against each other, I really think that in this case, and when you talk about a fashion story, when you look at her first dress and her second dress together, the story they tell is so clear. It's so clear that she looked for pieces that highlighted her, that were not about the dress, but about how the woman felt in the dress, that let everything disappear except for who she was and her face. I thought it was an absolute perfect transition, and it tied it all in. The second dress makes you love the first dress more. I felt that way.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way, but I mean, it just, I have no words for how great it was. I mean, clearly I don't, because I'm stumbling over my words right now, but it really, it just capped off just the entire day. It was such an elegant, they were the epitome of glamour. Like, that was a magazine ad right there. That was a magazine cover. And it just, it was simple, but it was so sexy. And so just, they looked like how they, not only did they look like royalty, they looked like Hollywood royalty.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that when, for me, like stepping away from just giving a review of it, because at the end of the day, I don't think that anyone cares, you know, whether or not, I don't think that Meghan Markle is concerned about our podcast.
Are you sure about that?
No, I'm not actually. Somebody should tweet her. She doesn't have a Twitter anymore. But I think that what's interesting about it all, as somebody who's so deeply immersed in weddings and wedding culture and events, let's talk about the trends that I think we're going to see, what we think we're going to see coming out of this. The fact that we are one, there is no doubt in my mind, we are going to see a whole lot of bridal fashion that is streamlined. We're gonna get away from the lace that was really kind of rebirthed with Kate. We are going to get away from embellishment. And as much as we all kind of feel like the tailoring was just a touch off on her, it's going to be about well-placed seams. It's going to be about fabric. It's going to be about letting the person shine through beyond the dress. I think that bridal fashion is going to go deep into minimalism, because she has given us permission to not, like, I think that the days of like the Panina, the overt sexiness, the naked dress, the see-through, I think those are going to be things that are reserved for like reality stars. But I think that socialites, I think that people with a level of sophistication are going to go very, very minimalistic for at least the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see we've already been seeing a return to formality, which I love, because like in my world, I love opulence. In terms of just the feeling, I think that more is more is better, or less is nothing is perfect. I'm not somebody who lives in the gray area or the middle grounds. I am, when it comes to styling, I'm an extremist. I love nothing or I love everything. I think we're going to see a lot of very intentional choices. What I'm hoping that we see, and I don't necessarily think that we will, but what I would truly love to see is I would love to see a return to the afternoon morning ceremony. Like the idea that we could do something that American wedding industry would start doing a daytime reception a daytime ceremony where we can do something the way that they did, and, you know, have a ceremony, have a beautiful brunch, and then change and go into a nighttime glam, I would love to see that take off.
That's exactly
that would be fantastic.
So isn't that the way it used to be? Because that's what my parents had and that's what my sister had.
It used to be that way. And then people started complaining about, you know, the drive to the church, or people stopped going to the church and were just going to the reception. And we got away from the meaning and we started moving towards the convenience. Well, it was more convenient to just do it all together. But the idea that we could go back and we could start seeing like a wedding ceremony at 12, followed by a 1 to 3 brunch, maybe even just for the bridal party,
mm-hmm.
or bridal party and family, and then a nighttime dinner. We already see brides changing and having multiple dresses. We already see, I mean, hell, I've had 3 grooms now that have done tuxedo changes where they've swapped out their tuxedo jacket for a smoking jacket, or they've changed their shoes or things like that. So the outfit change is something that we're seeing. But if we broke it up, if we did something during the day and then gave it a break and then went back, I think the impact would be amazing. I will say this, I'm going to push for that. If you are out there on the podcast and you are listening and you are a bride or groom to be, I want to do something where we break up the day in this manner. Call me.
Well, I will keep that in mind for when and if,
you know, in the event that, you know, you get married, this is what we'll be doing for you.
Perfect. Perfect.
So, hey, Alan, if you're out there, you guys are going to have a long ass day.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it was just something that I thought, I love the idea of that. And I love the fact, and this is, again, something that Americans have been known for a while, but it fits so beautifully into who they are. All of the flowers were taken and then made into bouquets and sent to hospice.
That's lovely. And then they, you know, keeping with the tradition that the Queen Mother, Queen Elizabeth's mom, had started, her bouquet was actually placed on the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier in Westminster
Yes.
Abbey. Which
and
Meghan's
was
that.
As well. Yep. And I, you know, we didn't even talk about her bouquet. I love the fact that he picked those flowers for it. I thought it was interesting because with Kate, you didn't see the bottom stems at all. With hers, you did. And it added to the kind of green motif that was happening.
And again, not to use the word rustic, because it was anything but rustic.
It was not rustic.
But there was a nod to the natural. And I found her bouquet to look very natural. And that's what I liked.
It was. But the other thing is, if you look at, just look at the color green. You know, this wedding was so fraught with symbolism and with meaning, from the flowers he picked to the flowers that were in the arches to the way that her veil was embroidered. I think that this was an incredibly intentional wedding. Green is the color of life. It's renewal. It's energy. It stands for like growth and harmony and freshness and, you know, fertility and virility. And it's this natural environment. And if you look at who she is, that is everything that she's bringing to the monarchy. She's renewing it. She's bringing it this new life and this energy. And there's like this feeling of growth that's happening. And the green really kind of, symbolically, I think, goes into that. And I think that all of these other colors that we were seeing, the pastels and the yellows, all of the softness goes to kind of her energy, but the green especially that we saw, notice you didn't really see a whole lot of red.
No.
Didn't see a lot of bold. You didn't see a lot of jewel tones. Everything was really, really soft. And the green, I think, was another meaning.
Well, and green is such a zen color. And that's one thing that, and again, to your point, she's an actress, you know, she can act her way through anything. But I just felt this this sense of serenity and zenness every time I looked at her. Like, she was so relaxed and so comfortable and so just...
Oh, yeah.
And you know, and I think that to your point with, you know, green being all of that, it's also just very... there was just such a chill vibe to it. Despite all the pomp and pageantry, there was a very chill vibe. And, you know, going back to, like, the preacher and all of the unique touches, never once did I watch that wedding and feel like they were aware of the people around them.
Not at all.
They were just so focused on each other. And him in particular, he was so focused on her.
Because at the end of the day, and I'm going to wrap up with this, because if there's, because after this, I don't think I have anything else to say. I'm sure I have a million things to say. At the end of the day, this was not her fairy tale. This was his. This was a boy who was so broken, who was made whole again by a woman that he loves. And I don't think there's anything, like, for me, that's what this was about. It's easy to talk about her because she's beautiful and she's glamorous and the fashion and the jewelry and all of those things. But when it comes to the fairy tale, this was Harry's happy ending. And it's the happy ending we all wanted for him. And I think all of the other stuff goes away when you realize that.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great way to look at it, because you're absolutely right, you know, especially leading up to the wedding and all of that and all of the stories that they would televise or the articles that we've read. And he really, you know, there was a period of time where he just kind of floundered and, you know, they call him the reluctant royal. Like, you know, he was born into this. He didn't have a choice, and he was broken. And, you know, he's even spoken about that. He's spoken about how he didn't deal with his mother's death. And I think, you know, I don't want to say she saved him, but she helped him heal.
100%. She made him okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that for us, this is a good way to step away. It's a good way to end it. I am sad that it's over, but I am thrilled for the two of them. I am thrilled for what it means for Americans. I'm thrilled for what it means for the British. This will go down in history as one of the most well-done weddings that we have ever seen. And despite whatever, I think the more that we look at it, the less the tailoring is going to bother us. And I think that the tailoring bothers us because of our current state of fashion. And as time goes on, this wedding is going to be as iconic as any other, and more so because I think it's one of the first times that we've seen everything be about the people and the way that they love each other. And so for me, I wish them every ounce of happiness, of love, of long life. You know, you can sing God Save the Queen, but really I think that we have all put our happiness in Harry and Meghan.
Agreed. And there won't be as much coverage or pomp and circumstance when Eugenia gets married in the fall, but we should definitely
regroup.
Andrew and Fergie's girl.
I know. I'm teasing.
I know. But we should definitely, you know, regroup and come back together and critique that one, because I have a feeling that one we're going to have a little bit of fun with.
I have a feel like maybe Meghan will be pregnant by then. Who knows?
Maybe.
But the fashion will be fun.
Yes, it will.
Either way, I appreciate the fact that you came back and you talked about this. I am really glad that we actually didn't get into this big of a conversation prior to the podcast, because I think it gave us a chance to kind of get scrappy and disagree with each other. For everyone who is watching or listening, If you have thoughts about the royal wedding, if you have anything you want to share, you can reach me at Andrea Eppolito pretty much everywhere on social. And Maria Nardi will be back. She is our British correspondent. And I am here celebrating life, luxury, and above all else, love. Thank you for sharing part of your day with me. If you want more information, check out the blog. That's AndreaEppolitoEvents.com. I am there all day, every day. Thanks, guys, so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.